thank you so much again for joining us. I know you've got a very busy schedule with all your teaching and your practice, so we really appreciate you taking the time to participate in these calls.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, let me, for those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Kavouros, let me give him a quick introduction. Dr. Kavouros graduated from Germany's Friedrich Alexander University Medical School in 1984, and he earned his PhD from Erlangen University a few years later. Dr. Kavouros began integrating homeopathy into his medical practice in 1990, and in 2001, he began intensive studies with Professor George Vitolkis. Since 2005, he's been the director of Vitolkis' video teaching in London for English and international homeopaths, and he also moderates the Vitolkis video course every summer in Alanisos, Greece. He currently presents clinical seminars in Sweden, England, Germany, and Canada. I'm sure there's other places as well that we'll be inviting him, because I've heard very positive feedback on his seminars. I was actually teaching in Canada at the same time that Dr. Kavouros was there, and some of the students who came to my session after they had participated in his weekend seminar were simply raving about what a fantastic teacher he was, how clear he is, and what a deep understanding he has of homeopathy. So, again, we're very fortunate to have somebody of this caliber joining us today for this teleconference interview. Dr. Kavouros is especially interested in the challenge of treating acute diseases, viral, pandemic, etc., with homeopathy and the relationship between acute and chronic disease, in examining the connection between levels of health and infectious diseases, and also in researching the increasing frequency and virulence of viral infections. And I just like to add that I had the opportunity, the wonderful opportunity, to have lunch with Dr. Kavouros when I was in Toronto. I don't remember, it was just maybe 3 or 4 months ago, Yorgos?
Yes, it was in end of October.
End of October, and we had just a delightful time discussing homeopathy and chatting, and I found out that he's a wonderful classical pianist, and I've been wanting myself to learn how to play the piano, and I'm very interested in learning how to play the Bach's Goldberg variations, and we discussed that, and he's been encouraging me to acquire a piano and pursue that. So this is a man of many talents, somebody who has delved deeply into medicine and homeopathy, and brings a wonderful teaching style with great humor and great insight. So, again, it's a great pleasure to have you to join us today.
Thank you very much, Kim.
So, Yorgos, I thought I would start by asking you about this whole issue of levels of health. I know Professor Vitolkis recently published a book with that title. And I'm curious, can you tell us a little bit about how knowing about these levels of health help us to understand, especially the more difficult cases that we have in our practice?
Yeah, the problem is that in the level of health, we divide the state of the immune system into four groups. That means from group one to group four. And this makes a very deep sense in that way that the reactions after giving a remedy, the expected reactions and the actual reactions are different from group to group. So let's say in one group you have a certain reaction, like an aggravation, which is fine. In another group you don't find this initial aggravation, and this still means your remedy was correct. So if you don't know these rules or this system, it is very, very hard to understand what happens after having given a remedy, of like judging whether the remedy was correct or not correct, especially for the people who are coming new into homeopathy. Like they are studying and they are overwhelmed by the many symptoms the patients have, and then they are overwhelmed about finding the correct remedy. And then one of the most frequent mistakes is that you find the correct remedy, you give the remedy, and you don't realize that it was the correct one. So this knowledge of the level of health makes us reduce our mistakes to a minimum. It can never happen that we don't do mistakes. We do everyday mistakes. But it will reduce your mistakes to a very low rate. And this is very encouraging, especially for the young students, when they have success in their prescribing. And then they stay with homeopathy, and they go deeper. And as you know, if you don't study a lifelong, you will never be a good homeopath. So the levels of health is like, it helps you, especially if you have a busy clinic and you just have sometimes somebody calls you on the telephone and you have to judge within 1, 2, 3 minutes whether the remedy we have given was correct. It helps you tremendously of like judging whether your prescription has made a change in the patient to the better or just was acting superficially.
You know, to me this seems like a very important subject because I think, and this is oftentimes overlooked or not discussed in great detail in homeopathic conferences, is this whole issue of case follow-up and really understanding what that reaction of the remedy, that the reaction of the remedy has in the patient and what that actually means. My question for you, Yorgos, is it easy to identify these levels of health, and can you give us a couple of ideas on how you would actually do that?
Yes. Actually, we have found in our teaching that when we present the levels of health in a couple of sessions, in a couple of lectures, then the students very easily or very soon grab the main idea, the basic idea, and they can charge upon the level. Maybe not exactly, but almost exactly. So it's very, I'm always very pleased if the students are very quickly getting this idea. So what are the criteria? The criteria are, one big criteria is like how the organism is dealing with acute problems, like acute disease, like fevers and acute states. So there's difference from all the groups. This is one point. The other point is the clearness of the remedy. That means in group one, which is the most healthy people, the most strong immune system, what Hahnemann called vis vitalis, the strongest vis vitalis, the strongest life energy, there you have, and this makes sense, a very clear picture of the remedy. The more you go down in levels, the more unclear is the remedy. This is due to the weakness of the immune system, and to the fact that you get more and more layers of remedies. So the uppermost layer is not as clear as it would be in group one. It's another criteria. The next criteria is, of course, the clinical picture plays a role. So in group one, group two, normally you find more functional disease. The more you go down in group three and group four, you find more like damage in the physical organs or in the psychic field or in the mental field. So this is another criteria. Another criteria is then, if you have given a remedy, the reaction on the remedy. Then if you had doubt to that point still, you see the reaction, then sometimes it will guide you. Okay, you say you thought it was a group three, but it was a group four patient. So you have some tools, and then of course it takes some experience to say, okay, this is a patient of group three. I give you an example, because we want to talk about difficult cases today. Group three and group four are those patients who the immune system is already quite compromised, especially in group four. We say the group four is the people who are incurable in a sense. So you can just palliate heavy cases of cancer, heavy cases of Alzheimer, and so on. So when you are in group three, the immune system still is strong enough to produce, after the correct remedy, an initial aggravation or an initial reaction, which you don't have in group four. So in group four, you will always see on the correct remedy an amelioration immediately after the remedy. So if you give this, if you get the same result in a group three patient, it means that the remedy was not correct, was just close remedy, was just acting superficially. So see how tricky it is. Huh? The same reaction in group three means wrong but close remedy. In group four, it means correct remedy. So if you have these heavy pathologies, you need to know this. And you know, this wisdom is quite recent, because neither Hahnemann nor Kent had a lot of these group four, lower group three patients. You can read it from the report, and you just see, if you read Kent's theory, he cannot distinguish in between group three and four, because just he didn't have enough patients to see that. Now with our advanced conventional medicine, we're going to talk about that a little bit later maybe, we get more and more group three and group four patients. So we have a lot of patients where we try to help them, and we have to understand where their immune system is working. And it's working differently in group three, and it's working differently in group four.
Very interesting. Now, you know, I know, as you well know, Yorgos, Hahnemann, in the footnote of Aphorism 1, rails against theoretical medicine. I have to ask you, do you consider this model of levels of health to be really a theoretical model, or is it more practical?
All of those who know George Vasulkas personally know that he is not coming from the theoretic side. He is very practical. Almost all of his interviews are observations out of a busy clinic he had over many, many, many years. So he first saw the results, and then he was thinking, okay, there is something in common with some patients, and there are different reactions in other patients. So it comes from a practical view, and not from a theorizing view. And I think this is very important, because if you are theorizing too much, and as you said correctly, Hahnemann has written that in Organon, don't theorize, then you get very easily lost, because you are overwhelmed. But if you look on the things from a practical view, this is group three, I expect this and this reaction. Also, don't forget, if you tell the patient, okay, I'm expecting an initial reaction in your case, it could be like headaches, could be like diarrhea, whatever, then the patient has much more trust in your ability, or in the ability of homeopathy as a whole, when you can predict things. Something that allopathic medicine cannot do so easily. So patients are always very, I would say, very pleased if you tell them what might happen.
Yorgos, you mentioned George Vasulkas, who obviously is the progenitor of this idea of levels of health. And, you know,
yes.
I travel quite a bit around North America, and I teach at a number of different schools. And it seems to me that people are not these days, at least in North America, I think it's less true, it's just in Singapore, where pretty much everybody in Singapore is very familiar with George's work and, you know, very much a student of his teachings. But here in North America, many people have seemed to move away from George, and they're embracing a lot of the newer ideas and some of the newer teachers that are coming up. And I'm always surprised by this, because at least for me personally, you know, like when I read, you know, The Science of Homeopathy or The Levels of Health or his Materia Medica Viva, to me these are maybe the greatest works that have ever been written in homeopathy. And I'm just curious, in terms of your own opinion, what do you feel that George has actually contributed to the science and art of homeopathy?
Okay, from my personal history, I was, as you said correctly, from 1990, about that time, I was going into homeopathy, and I met George in 2001, I think, winter 2000-2001. So in all that 10 years, I was partly self-studying, so I read all the books that were available at that time. There were not so many books like now. There's an inflation of books at this moment. But and I was reading books from Sankara and from Scholten, and these books existed at that time already, and other books. And I had the feeling this is not the whole truth what they were writing at that time. So although I had not much experience, But I felt, and I think you know that, if you hear some music, you think, this sounds good, you read something and you feel, this is not the whole truth. It cannot be like this. So then I met George with Wilkers, which I didn't want to, because I said, okay, I know enough, why know a new system now or a new thing now? I was a little bit of like lazy. The moment I met him, my lower jaw, it was just a video, my lower jaw was falling down. I could not believe that a man could be so clear and so much answering all the questions that had been unanswered for so many years in my head. And I thought, I was puzzled. I said, how can he know the questions I want to know? Because it was a video. I could not ask any question. So what really touched me was the clearness. He's coming from a scientific side into homeopathy, and I think this is a very good approach, especially for us who we have to deal with the conventional medicine system, and I believe we are even more scientific than they are. And especially George's approach is so clear, scientific, and logic. So once you have understood the idea of the level of health, you can think it to the end, and then you will see that it makes sense. And especially in your daily clinic, you may not believe all the things he says, but then you see in the practice it's exactly what he has described. So thank you for the question with the theoretical and practical, because I think many of the new schools in homeopathy are a lot more under theoretic assumptions. Like, and as a student, it's very hard to say, okay, it's true or not true, I believe it or I don't believe. It's not a question of belief. It's a question of it works in the practice, in your clinic, or it does not work. So, okay.
You know, I don't know if you know this, Yorgos, but the very first time I met George in person was in New York City. And I remember the thing that astounded me more than anything else was within literally just a few minutes of meeting him, he was describing things about me that there's no way that a normal person could have known. I mean, he just knew things about me. And I realized that he had some type of tremendous gift of perception, where he could, based on his, you know, intensive study of homeopathy, he could just look at somebody and observe their behavior and really understand what was motivating the actions that he was observing. And I realized that perceptive gift that he has allowed him to write the Materia Medica and write these great philosophy books, because he was able to see in his own practice, like you said, through clinical experience, the real truths that exist, and was able to elucidate them in these great works. So, you know, I guess I'll ask you just one more question about Professor Vatolkas, which is, I know that you're very much involved in his video course, both in Alanisos and also, I think, in Canada as well. Can you maybe just share with us a little bit about what the value of these programs are, or why maybe people would want to participate in them?
Yes, very, very, very good question. First, I want to add something what you said. George, of course, sees people has, like you said, immediate impression of somebody, but this does not come so much from intuition or clairvoyant or whatever. No, it comes from experience. It comes that he has seen, like he says, about 200,000 people. And then he knows, and of course he is very interested, he's a scientific mind, he's very interested into the human structure, how we are functioning, our psychological level, our mental level. And so by observation of little things, he gets very quickly a picture. Because if it would be intuition, you could not learn as a student. It would be frustrating. But if it's like a science of observation together with experience, and some of the experience you can give to your students. You know that you do that every day. When you teach your students, you give them your experience, and that's what makes the students trust you. And so you can learn it in a way. And this is a good hope for the students. Otherwise, they say, okay, he has the intuition. How will I ever get this intuition? No, it's not a question of intuition. It's a question of knowledge and experience. So the video course, and I'm glad that George and I will start a new teaching, a new complete, we call it the complete teaching in July in Alonissos, which is going for 3 years, 2 weeks, a very intense course. And you can ask any student who has been there for the last 3 years. You really get very quick. And what you get there, you get the basics you need to start to have a clinic. The basics to be able to prescribe, the basics to be able to judge whether your remedy was correct or not correct. So he has done a wonderful job in really putting this basic knowledge on video, and I'm so much amazed every time. I've given the video course many times now, how quick the students understand about homeopathy. And especially because you mentioned the new schools, and through the clearness of this teaching, clearness about theory is one thing. And the other thing is that the materia medica, what you also mentioned, is presented in such a way that George, from his experience, really shows which are the symptoms you're going to meet in daily clinic many, many times. Let's give an example. There are some theories. Germany has a lot of theories in homeopathy. The whole world has a lot of theories. One of the theories is that the polycrests, or the so-called big remedies, they are not any longer so necessary to be prescribed. This is one theory. It says now we have to go to all the small remedies, but not the big remedies. There is some truth in it, and I can explain. But I still have a lot of sulfur cases. I still have a lot of lycopodium and sepia cases and pulsatilla cases. So, but what happens, because people think too complicated, I've seen many patients, they come from other homeopaths, and they don't realize what a sulfur case is. Because, as you know, sulfur has so many symptoms, I think more than 7,000 symptoms. If you don't know the basic symptoms of sulfur, you might miss a sulfur case and make a wrong prescription. So what is the unique in his teaching is that he really gives those symptoms he has found out in 200,000 people to be the most frequent and the most reliable symptoms to prescribe on. So, and the teaching we're doing in Alonissos, we have a part of theory, we have a part of materia medica, and we see live cases every day. So this combination brings the students so quickly into homeopathy. It's unbelievable. I've seen after 2 weeks, young students, medical students or other students, after 2 weeks could prescribe for medium difficult cases correctly. I could not believe myself that this is possible. But because it's so basic and it's so clear that if you follow the teaching, then you can advance your homeopathic knowledge very quickly. And of course, then you have to study at home. And you have, like you do and I do, one of the purposes of the clinical seminars is to teach also the small remedies. Of course, in our school, we teach 135 to 40 remedies. This is a basis, but this is a base. And then you have to go to smaller remedies. But as a whole, this educational program, the more I have heard it 20 times maybe, and I'm still learning from these videos.
Yeah, I really like what you said about the practical side of it, because I know that, for example, in George's Materia Medica Viva, that the descriptions of the remedies are based really from clinical results, either from, you know, his own practice or from going through the old journals and identifying those symptoms which are repeatedly found to be cured by the remedies. And this is really what I find to be so important about this book, is that, you know, okay, it's beautifully written and it paints a lovely vignette of the remedy, but it's absolutely clinically effective in practice. It's exactly the way you see these patients, and you can rely on it, and it's not theoretical. And for me, it's something that I can really count on. And it's, you know, to me, it's just it's one of the most important gifts that we have in homeopathy. Yorgos, you mentioned a clinical seminar just a moment ago, and I know that you're going to be teaching. You're actually coming to North America on from April 30th through the 1st of May. You're going to be doing a seminar in Toronto on pediatrics. For people who want more information about that, you can contact Riverdale Homeopathic Resources, website for Riverdale Homeopathic Resources is www.rhronline, that's O-N-L-I-N-E.ca. Again, that's www.rhronline.ca. And if you go to their website, you'll find the seminar, Homeopathic Treatment of Pediatric Cases, which will be taking place between April 30th and May 1st. And again, this is a series of what Yorgos calls clinical seminars. So I thought perhaps, Yorgos, you could explain a little bit, well, what do you mean by clinical seminars?
Yes. So first of all, it's practical seminars. Some years before, actually it was in 2004 or 5, I don't remember, when I gave my first so-called clinical seminars in Sweden. It was the first one I gave. Actually, I founded these clinical seminars for myself because I felt that I'm not good trained enough to prescribe correctly in acute cases, partly because I did not know enough remedies, partly because I could not differentiate some of the big remedies even in particular symptoms. So the idea behind actually was born when you know about the level of health, and we said there are four groups, group 1, 2, 3, and 4, and many, many of our patients now, especially in the so-called developed countries, the development does not refer to the health, of course, but develop means economics and technological improve. So in the so-called developed countries, you see a shift from group 2 to group 3, so a lot of people going down. The moment you bring them back from group 3 to group 2, you're going to face having acute problems, and you're going to having some, you could say, healing crisis, oftentimes with fever. And I felt myself that I was not trained enough, or I was not good enough to cope with all these cases. So I thought, okay, I have to study more remedies, and I have to be able to differentiate better between remedy and remedy. This created the idea of clinical seminars, because when I was listening to George in his lectures, I always was fascinated by the differentiations of the remedies. So I thought, okay, and also, you know it as well, we have talked about the old masters, which you admire too, and if you open these books, they could prescribe on 2 or 3 symptoms. They were so good in knowing, okay, if the patient has this and this and this symptom, the most eventual remedy is suya, or the most likely remedy is this and that. And this knowledge nowadays, I feel, is not, because I see so many students in so many countries, is not enough spread. And I try with my clinical seminars to focus on one subject, like pediatrics now in Toronto. Next week I'm giving a cardiological or so-called heart seminar in Germany, to focus on a subject, and it's mainly about acute cases, but it's also about, and I add some chronic cases, just to give ideas of remedies you don't know so much. So like small remedies, but which are maybe very, very necessary, for example, for heart infarct, for rheumatic remedies you don't know. So the beauty is that after having done that now for 5-6 years, these clinical seminars are getting more and more popular. And I have dedicated myself into creating one new seminar per year. This means this year, for example, is a rheumatological and orthopedian seminar, which I will do in, I think, November first time. And it's incredible much work for me. It's about 200 to 300 works of study for one seminar, at least. I don't know. I cannot calculate. But it's my way to keep myself steady, and it's my way to present it to the students, because they get some remedies, they get some ideas, and they get also some knowledge about clinical medicine as a whole. So which symptoms are pathognomonic? Which symptoms are good to differentiate in between the remedies? Which are the main remedies for a heart problem that goes from the front side of the chest backwards? Which are the main remedies for this issue? Like sulfur, tenchris, spigelia. These are the remedies which have this projection of the pain from front to the back, which is typical for an infarct, which is on the back side of the heart. So by combining this I found it's for me exciting and also for the students very exciting. So they like this kind of approach.
When you describe it, I'm thinking to myself, I have to find the time to participate in one of your seminars. I would really like to take the advantage of listening to you present. Again, I've heard such wonderful things about your teaching. Could you just tell us maybe briefly why you feel that the student, or what the student can get out of these clinical seminars, why it's so important for specifically learning homeopathy, that they use this type of approach?
Yeah, it is an approach which is, some of the students say, okay, why do I need acute prescribing? I just focus on chronic disease, like migraine, like rheumatic problems. The thing is, the moment you move people from group 3, where most of our patients already are, into group 2, you will make out of a chronic problem, we talked about this subject last time, you make out of a chronic problem a subchronic and an acute disease. So in order to follow the patient's development, you, after having dealt with his chronic problem, and in order to disappear, you will have acute problems. And if you are not able to deal with these acute problems, patient goes to allopathy and will fall back inviolably to group 3. So what you learn in these seminars is how you deal with acute problems, which will occur in almost all the patients, except of group 1 patients. But the group 1 patients, and there, because these organisms are very strong, so you might cure them with 1-2 remedies, but those patients are like 1-3% in the developed countries. So most of our patients are lower group 2 and group 3, and there, once you want to stop the chronic problem, you will have to deal with acute problems. This is one thing. The other thing is that in these conditions, you sometimes need small remedies, and maybe you have read about them, but you forget it again. So by approaching even the small remedies from different sides, like spigelia is not a small remedy, but it's a remedy which is for neuralgias. It's a remedy which is for rheumatic problems even. It's a remedy that has a lot to do with the eye, and it's a remedy that has a lot to do with the heart. So by seeing the remedy from different sides, you understand better the character of the remedy. And don't forget again that if you see like lower group 3 patients, you sometimes have to prescribe, of group 4 patients even, on essentials. This means that because the picture is so unclear, you have to think about, okay, which combination of symptoms go for which remedy. Again, an art that the old masters could do very, very well. This you learn in the seminar, and then I try to give some of my experience by showing cases. So show how is a typical chelidonium pneumonia, for example. How is, for example, a few days before I had a patient had left-sided shoulder pain. You will know, but this is a symptom of sulfur. And because this patient had a sulfur 2 years before, I immediately could ask for sulfur. Because with that knowledge, and this is the kind of knowledge I like to train in myself and in the students.
Fantastic. You know, you're talking here about acute remedies, or I guess remedies for the acute exacerbation.
Acute prescribing.
Yeah. Now you're making a distinction between real acutes and the acute exacerbation of the chronic state, because I know there's a difference between those two. Like, you know, you have an asthma attack; it's not really so much an acute as an acute exacerbation of the patient's chronic condition. So I guess my question is, are you finding that the remedies that you're prescribing, let's say for an acute asthma attack, let's say the patient, you know, they have their chronic state, and then there's some stress that comes along, and they develop an acute exacerbation of their chronic state, and, they get an asthma attack or a bronchitis or whatever else it is, something they tend to are predisposed towards under certain types of stresses. Are you finding in your practice, Yorgos, that the remedies you're giving for those acute exacerbations are the same remedies as the chronic remedies, or are you finding that they're different remedies, or is it a combination? What are you finding in your own practice?
This is a very good question. I always answer before I start a clinical seminar, because this is the basic question. It means, and I was very unclear with this question for many years before I met George. So I was, because all the other books I read, it was a little bit unclear. Somebody said, oh, you have to give the chronic remedy, you have to give an acute remedy, but I never knew what is really the truth. The truth is very simple. The truth is, like, you have a chronic case of asthma, to stay with your example. And you give us a first remedy, the uppermost layer is tuberculinum or lycopodium, whatever. Let's say tuberculinum. And then this person gets an acute exacerbation, like you said, which could take also the form of a pneumonia. This patient can be, after your remedy, you give tuberculinum, doing better with the breathing, but then going to a pneumonia. And, of course, the breathing will be worse again. Now, should you repeat the tuberculinum? Should you give an acute remedy? This is the question. The answer is very simple. The answer is that in the moment you have this acute exacerbation or an acute with fever or whatever occurring during chronic treatment, you have to look to the presented picture. You have to look to the symptoms. Do the symptoms follow your recent prescription, which was tuberculinum, like the patient is sweating a lot, is grinding his teeth in the night, and so on? You can repeat tuberculinum. But if the appearing symptoms, the new symptoms, give a clear picture of another remedy, you go with that other remedy. And exactly here is the point where I described before. You may need some small remedies here. And if you don't know them, you might be lost in this situation. So this is a very basic, and thank you for this question, this is a very basic question where many, many mistakes are done by ourselves and by the students if you are not clear in that point.
Yeah, it seems like a fundamental issue in practice. And again, it gets to the whole issue of case management and understanding how the life force moves forward. And I think this is what I love about homeopathy, is that it really isn't theoretical. You simply follow the state of the patient expressed in the form of symptoms, and it guides you to the next prescription, necessary prescription. So, you know, it's such a...
Exactly.
It's such a beautiful art form and science. It's not just an art form. It's actually a real science. That's the other thing I want to say, is that, you know, it really is much more scientific in a fundamental sense than really how conventional medicine is practiced. So, Yorgos, you mentioned that you've been talking a little bit about the smaller remedies as well, and you mentioned that these have become quite popular. There's actually a number of teachers out there who say that they never give polycrests. any longer, that they only give small remedies. So my first question for you is, do you feel that there is something about the polycrests that make them more common in practice, or do you feel that they're just kind of equal to all the other remedies? So that's the first question, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you go back again, the answer for this question is in the levels of health. If you go in the group one, you will find much more in your correct prescriptions of the so-called big remedies or polycrests. The more you go down, the more likely you're going to need also smaller remedies. That means the percentage, like say in a more scientific way, the percentage of prescription of sulfur may be, I say something, 5% or 10% in group one. It will be still, or calcarea carbonica. If you go down the groups, if you are in group four, the percentage for calcarea carbonica may be only 2 or 3%. So the polycrests are still there, but other remedies are coming more frequent, and there they come, the small remedies. That means, this means in another way, if as a student of homeopathy or as a practitioner, you want to help patients from group four, group three, you need to have more knowledge about the smaller remedy. There's no question. But I have not found that the polycrests are really more rare, because the moment you move them up from group three to group two, more and more the polycrests are coming. Because I want just to make a point in, I believe that Western conventional medicine is in a big crisis at the moment. Without most of the physicians, and only some people are realizing that. And the big crisis is that despite of all the good diagnostic tools they have, the therapy tends to make people more ill. That means what Hahnemann said, that if you just suppress the symptoms, people are getting more ill. That means what we're getting more and more, like in about, I don't know exactly, but for example, like in the last 40 years, like we have 12 levels of health. So group two is from level 4 to level 6. Like I would say in Germany, 40 years before, the average level of health over the whole population would have been like level 4 to level 5. Now, 40 years later, if you make the average person, you get level 6 to 7 with a tendency downwards. This means that we are getting more and more difficult cases. And that's the reason why some of the new teachers, they say, okay, no, we don't see any more the clear sulfur symptoms. We go for a remedy which is another remedy. No, this is a misunderstanding, because the sulfur picture in group 3 is different from the sulfur picture in group 1. It's not so clear, but it's still a sulfur case. So many of the polycrest prescription, in my experience, tend to be overseen, and instead of that, other remedies are given. And of course, you gave me that question last time. I was very amazed by this question, because you said, is there at one point only one correct remedy or several possibilities? I believe at one point there is only one possibility, but I cannot prove it. But if there is only one possibility, then you have to give sulfur, even if it's not so clear picture as it is in group one.
Yorgos, are you finding that when you're in, you know, the level one, where, you know, the patient tends to be healthier and you're giving more of the polycrest remedies, are you finding that there's a certain group that you consider to be polycrest, and are these more mineral remedies or plant remedies or animal remedies? Are you finding anything like that?
No. I have not. This is another theory that exists in the world, and especially in German, very strongly, that they claim Kant has said that, but I'm not so sure whether Kant really has meant that. Kant has said that there is a depth to every remedy. There's a I don't know the English expression. There's a point where a remedy can go till here and not more far, not further. Actually, this is something we cannot confirm. It can be any remedy. It can be a plant remedy. It can be a no-sold. It can be a mineral remedy. It just refers to the symptoms of the patient. The more you get, okay, for example, okay, you could say Calcarea carbonica. Like, if you go back 30, 40 years, there was a lot of children born with Calcarea carbonica and also with Calcarea phosphorica. These children now, due to the decreasing level of health, and this is a big problem I'm going to speak about in the pediatric seminar too, and I'm going to speak about the vaccinations too, what they do in that field, that a less big percentage is born with calcarea, clear calcarea picture. Why? Because they are already born in group 2, or maybe born, even some of them are born in group 3. So with the decreasing health, the clearness of the picture is going away. And as I said, smaller remedies are needed, but you cannot make a theory out of, in fact, just look for a small remedy. This is wrong. Still the possibility of sulfur, still the possibility of lycopodium, of sepia is there.
Yorgos, do you feel that there are some remedies which are truly more acute than they are chronic? Like, for example, a remedy like aconite, for example. Do you see this as a remedy which is generally given more in acute situations, or do you feel that this could equally be given in a chronic condition as well?
Okay, I think George Lucas has clarified this issue very well, because even if you look back in Hahnemann, yeah, he already knew that aconite is not only an acute remedy. Hahnemann just described that. And in our days where panic attacks and anxieties are so strong, we use aconite as one of our most important remedies for, like, people have been in life-threatening situations, and from there, or even after years, they create panic attacks. So, I would even say that in my clinic, I use aconite even more for chronic cases than for acute cases. Of course, we know aconite is a fantastic remedy for all the inflammations in the heart, for example, for myocarditis, endocarditis. But of course, according to the symptoms, only if you have this restlessness, this anxiety, and so on. But it's a very good point. I think aconite has developed a very good reputation in chronic cases.
Yorgos, you've been talking about the different levels of health, and you've been mentioning that today, whereas maybe 100 years ago, you'd see more patients coming in, like maybe during Hahnemann's time or maybe a little bit later, mm-hmm. during Kent's time, you'd see a lot of patients coming in maybe level 1 or even level 2. But today, a lot of these people are coming in level 2, 3, and maybe even 4, and that this is creating a different situation for the homeopath. So with that in mind, are you finding that the practice today really has to be understood in terms of these levels of health? And maybe you could tell us a little bit about what are some of the challenges that you feel that the modern homeopath actually faces.
Yeah, okay. Just I wanted to explain something. It's 12 levels of health and 4 groups.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, so group 1 is level 1 to 3, group 2 is 4 to 6, group 3 7 to 9, and then 10 to 12. So this is levels, is the subdivision. The term is group. So there's several challenges. The one challenge is that, as I said, the decreasing health of the people. And I believe that you can only by knowing the theory very well, you are able to treat group 3 patients. This is the one thing. The other thing is that I believe that homeopathy, because it's such an intelligent method of curing people, that the need for homeopaths in the near future will be very, very high. So there will come becoming, I've talked about this for the last 5 years, I think. There will be coming a point where the people, or coming from the newspapers, or even coming from the politicians, I don't know from where will come. I think there will be a whole shift from allopathic medicine into homeopathy. And I think the challenge for us is, that are we ready at time to take all the responsibility for all those cases? Are we enough good homeopaths to deal with all the patients? So I believe this is one a big challenge for me as a teacher, to train a lot of physicians or homeopaths or homeopathic physicians to be able to take that challenge, because the more years will pass, the more the level will go down. And then they will ask for homeopathy, and we have all group 3 patients. You must be very good trained to be able to see good results in a time which you can overview.
Jorgos, why do you feel that the levels of health and people are moving towards the deeper groups, from group 1 to 2 and then 3 and then to 4? Why do you feel this is happening?
Well, I think it is because, and Hahnemann already wrote that, because if you just treat symptoms, the health will decline. That means, if you compare Hahnemann's time with nowadays time, the allopathic medicine now at Hahnemann's days and now the allopathic remedies are more safe concerning the so-called immediate side effects, what you see. But what we are talking about here, and part of these side effects, are suppressive effects. That means you suppress a headache, and at Hahnemann's time, the possibilities they used a lot of very toxic substances, and you had toxic effects very, very quickly. Nowadays, the method of allopathic medicine is much more skilled, and you won't see immediate aggravations, but you will see a suppression on the long term. That means you will see a shift, like opposite to the law of Hering, from outside inside. This is one point, is the allopathic medication. The other point is, of course, and I will talk about this, the vaccinations. Another point is, of course, and this is one of the most important points, the mistreatment, the mismanagement of allopathy in acute diseases. You have made many times in your clinic the observation people are treated a lot with antibiotics. The acute problems stop, like the bronchitis, the pneumonia stop, and the chronic problems will come up. So, and there's some more reasons, but these are the main 3 reasons for me. So this steadily mistreatment in a holistic sense of treatment, this steady mistreatment of people creates more and more suppression, and if you suppress the organism, the disease will go inside and the level will go down. This is the same.
Jorgos, today there are different types of stresses that people are experiencing than they would have maybe 100 or 150 years ago. Do you feel that these different stresses, like maybe electromagnetic radiation or toxicity in the fluoride in the water, that any of these have an effect on the levels of health in the groups that people are found in?
Yes, of course. You always, like now we will have a nuclear radioactivity in the next weeks over the planet, most probably. So hopefully not, but this is happening the last hours now. So and Hahnemann himself stressed that already. All the stresses that are negative for your body bring down your level of health. Let's see the two of us. We are traveling a lot. We are flying a lot. We are overexerting our organisms a lot. And this means that you have a natural, like, you have a natural oscillation of your level of health. If you sleep well, you're at your house, you feel good, it's a little bit higher. Then it can go down after exerting your body. Then all the stresses come, electromagnetic, totally correct what you say. And that will bring you down. And then maybe, because you get some symptoms, you treat them allopathically, and then you go even more down. You overstress your body, you go even more down. So, of course, people had, in some respect, from the environmental influences, had a much better time at Hahnemann's time, and all the mental, psychological stresses we're going through. But this makes even more the people need homeopathy, because I feel homeopathy is the most strongest tool to bring people back in the level of health.
Very interesting. You know, Jorgis, I'd like to open it up and let some of the other participants ask some questions. But before I do that, let me just remind everybody that Dr. Kavouras will be coming to North America and presenting a seminar on homeopathic pediatrics in Toronto, Canada. This is from April 30th through May 1st. If you want more information about that, you can visit the Riverdale Homeopathic Resources website at www.rhron.ca. So that's www.rhronline.ca. And also, Dr. Kavouras will be teaching in a number of other places as well. He'll be in Germany between the 19th to the 20th of March. He does his Vitolkis video course in London, April 5th through the 10th of this year. He'll be in Romania, May 4th through the 8th. He'll be in France, the 21st and 22nd of May in Paris, and then again his video course, George Vitolkis' video course, July 3rd through the 16th, and then he'll be again in Romania July 25th through the 29th. If you want more information about any of his upcoming homeopathic seminars, you can go to his website, which is www.kavouras.de. I'll spell that out for you, www.kavouras.de. So www.kavouras.de. Okay, so with that, let me go ahead and open up the lines and see if they have any questions. We don't have a great deal of time, but maybe we can get a question or two in. So does anybody have any questions for Dr. Kavouras?
This is Gloria. I have one.
Hi, Corey. Go ahead.
Okay. I certainly followed your analysis of the groups, doctor, and I'm wondering if you're prescribing for the groups with more compromised health, like your low twos, threes, and maybe even fours, affects your selection of potency.
The last I didn't understand was about potency.
Yeah, she asked as relates to the various groups 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yes.
Does treating the different groups affect your posology approach? What potency and dose you're going to use?
Yeah, very good question. Thank you for that. So the more you get down in level of health, the more compromised the immune system is, the lower is the potency normally. And that means that even in, especially in group 3 and group 4, especially if you have heavy physical pathology, you have even to go very low, like C12, and have to repeat daily. That means the stronger the immune system, the higher you can go in potency. So there's a direct connection, which helps us a lot about giving the correct potency if you know the level of health.
Okay. Jorgos, I'm just curious, do you use the dry potencies or do you use the liquid or a combination?
Well, normally in chronic cases I use the dry potencies. In acute cases I quite often let the patient dissolve the remedy.
Okay. Unfortunately, I see that we're out of time. It is 10 a.m. on the West Coast here in California. So there won't be time for more questions, but hopefully, Jorgis, you'll join us again for another one of these. It's always very enlightening.
Yes, I will.
Okay, I am glad to hear that. And just so you know, I will be in Toronto, Jorgis, when you'll be there, so hopefully we can have lunch again together. I'd like that very much.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. So I'm going to open up the lines, and if we can give Dr. Kavouras a big North American thank you, I think that would be wonderful.
Thank you very much.